That's my cue. All right. So we're going to talk about doors today. How many of you, a little interaction, get ready. If you need to stretch, go ahead. How many of you guys have a front door in your house? Okay, good. If you do not, I suggest getting one. How many of you have a back door? Back door, okay. How many of you guys have like closet doors? Okay, here's one that at one of my houses we didn't have, but I really suggest you having a bathroom door. Yeah, it was kind of awkward, but it was, well, anyways, if you need this story, I could tell it to you later. How many of you guys have a garage door? Okay, excellent. Car door, most of us, yeah. Does anyone have like a hidden door? We had one earlier in the other service. No? Oh, excellent. It's no longer a secret. how about a trap door? No? No? Trap door? Okay. Shower door. How about a French door? French doors? Okay, cool. Sliding doors? Okay. There are all sorts of different types of doors. Doors are great for entering and exiting. Doors open opportunities. Doors are amazing. When it's cold inside and it's really hot outside, it keeps us nice and cool inside. When we want to decorate them and be all welcoming, we can make it look all pretty and welcoming. When we want to slap the no soliciting sign, we can make it look intimidating and mean. You know, doors are great. They're flexible. They do a lot of things for us. Today, we're going to be looking at doors. Why? Because one of our passages takes us right there. In the book of Revelation, chapter 3, 7 and 8, it's a story. It's an angel talking to a church, and this church is actually Philadelphia, city of brotherly love. This one's the one in Turkey, the ancient Turkey. And John is writing this because he's getting a vision from God to write these things, and he's using a lot of symbols. He uses trumpets and bowls and lampstands, animals, and today he's using doors. And doors represent decisions. Options, choices that we have to make. And this is what the passage says. What he opens, he being Jesus, we find that out in previous passages. What he opens, no one can shut. And what he shuts, no one can open. I know your deeds. See, I have placed before you an open door that no one can shut. I know that you have very little strength. Yet you have kept my word and have not denied my name. See, the people that this has been written to are under persecution. They have been kicked out of their jobs. Some of them have been killed. Some have been put in prison for their faith in Jesus Christ. And this is an encouragement to them. But they don't see many doors and they don't know what's going to go on. And so Jesus is telling them, I see what you've done, and I'm opening some doors. I'm making a way for you. And so we see that God works on behalf of his people to open and close doors, that God is at work changing the circumstances to our lives. But unfortunately, a lot of times, it's hard to see what exactly he's doing. Sometimes I have a hard time going, is this God? Or is this just what I want? Should I really go this way? Or shouldn't I? And doors are really important because the doors we choose to go through changes our destiny. The choices we make now affect who we will become. There's a thing that's called opportunity cost. When you choose this way, you probably will not get these choices again. And so you do this, you lose that. And we all know that the enemy of great is good. So everybody works really hard to make the best decisions that they can. We see this especially with parents that are sending kids off to school. They get this idea because many times they tell kids two things in the morning when the kids are going to school. Johnny, I love you. Make good choices today. Because the reputation that Johnny's going to make, the decisions he's making today affects his friendships, affects his reputation, affects the schooling, affects so much that's going to happen. So we as parents want our kids to remember, make good choices. Christians are no different than anyone else. We want to do the best we can. People who are not Christians are still trying to make the best decisions they can. The only difference between the two is the criteria that we use to make the decision. As a Christian, as a follower of Jesus Christ, I choose the doors that I think God would have me choose, not necessarily what I want to choose. It is my belief as a Christ follower that if I follow his plan for my life, it will go immensely better than if I follow my plan for my life. Because he created me, because he made me to be special and unique, I want to do special and unique things, and so I should follow his plan. This might sound crazy to those of you who aren't Jesus followers. I understand that, and it would be crazy if we're just following it and it didn't help us at all. I hope that you listen and absorb kind of the rest of the stories and stuff that we'll talk about, because I believe that my life is incredibly better because of the relationship I have with Jesus. Now, I don't think that God really cares whether you drink Pepsi or you drink Coke. So these aren't the decisions I'm talking about. However, I think he immensely cares of whether a Green Bay Packer fan, how they treat a Bears fan, or a Bears fan treat a Packer fan. Because I think that reflects him more than whether you root for the Packers or the Bears. Because we all know the Bears are better. I couldn't say that the first service because Dan was here and he's a Packer fan. But I see you, Al. It's nice being up here. So that's our criteria. We follow God because we believe that he has the best things for us. But it's still very difficult. There are times where I struggle and I say, where is God in this? What do I do? I am at a loss. Well, there's three things that I have found that has really helped me along the way. These are not complete. I'm sure there's smarter people out there that have more than these three and probably better ones than these three. But I hope that if you take these three, they will help you. They will give you some tools to work through some of these decisions. And the first one is know God's standards. Yeah, standards. It looked different on my computer, but that's okay. Know God's standards. In order to know God's standards, we need to know God. Now, God wrote this amazing book called the Bible for us to understand him. He wants us to know him. He wants us to know his character. He wants us to know how he loves, who he loves, and all of that. So as we spend time in God's word, we learn about God and we see who he is, his character, and then we understand his standards. And so God will never open a door and expect you to do something against his standards. God isn't a violent God. There's some stuff in the Old Testament that opens the door to that. That's a totally different discussion. This morning, as we look at Jesus Christ, we see him talk about loving others and turning the other cheek. We see him instructing his people to love your enemies as yourself. If that's his character, if that's who we are to be, He is not going to call us to be violent towards other people who do not agree with us. God doesn't cheat. In fact, God is a self-sacrificing person who died for us. So he's not looking for a way to get ahead by using other people. We can see the doors that we choose, and we can narrow down some of the choices by saying, this is not in character with God. This is not who I understand God to be. This is not an option for me. The pastor down at Saddleback, Rick Warren, tells this story when he's talking about this. And there's this guy in his church who's been a member since 1980. And he was working at one of three big companies that were all competing for the same market. And this friend of his was the vice president of one of those companies. And that company, the president one day came to that vice president, the friend of his, and said, I want you to start doing this. And he asked the vice president to do something very unethical. And the friend said, I can't do that. I am a follower of Jesus Christ, and it is unethical. It's wrong. I'm sorry. I just can't do that. And he got fired. Man, that door is shut. That doesn't look good. He just lost his way to make money, his livelihood, and he's out. Something he was good at. He was vice president, just out like that. And it didn't look very good for quite a while, but God was protecting this guy because about 6 months later, he gets hired as the president of the competition. And then the two other companies, see what happened was his company took the integrity route and it kept growing and getting blessed while the other two companies sank lower and lower, and eventually he bought out both the other companies. God opens doors and closes doors. And when you follow God because you know what his character is like and his standard is like, it will help you narrow down your choices. It will help you decide which doors to go through and which doors to avoid. Second thing, not only do you need to know God's standards and know God, you need to know yourself. Many of us have a picture of ourselves, kind of like a caricature. Things are out of shape, they're out of distortion. We don't always have the most accurate view of ourselves. And because of this, we make some poor decisions. God's made us with unique passions and abilities and strengths. And when we know those things and we know where God is pointing us, it eliminates a lot of bad choices. For instance, say I was 6'5", 300 pounds, big guy. I don't really like animals. When the opportunity to become a jockey probably comes up, I should pass. It might be lucrative, but I don't think it's going to last very long. You got to know how God's wired you, who God's made you to be. But if God's made you to be an engineer, if you have those abilities and those talents, don't settle for anything less. Don't get sidetracked by other nice options when God's made you to be something amazing. So know yourself. That'll help you clarify a lot of doors. And lastly, know God's voice. Okay, let me just be honest here. This is a growing place in my life. I do not have this down. I hope that I am improving on this. But what I am about to tell you is some practice, more theory. And I just have to be honest with you, I'm not there yet. But I believe that there is power in this. We look at today's passage that we read earlier, and the Lord said, go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake came a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. In other versions, it's not whisper, it's sheer silence. In a Jewish translation, it's not whisper or sheer silence. It's a gentle tugging of the heart. It's not even audible. And we know that Elijah couldn't make out what was going on because, when Elijah heard it, he had to go out. He pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave to be able to understand it, to be able to hear it fully. And then a voice said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? See, Elijah had just had this major victory over the prophets of Baal, and fire came down from heaven. It was a glorious thing. He should have been on cloud nine. But the problem was those prophets of Baal were all employed by the king and queen, and now the king and queen wanted him dead. And he felt like all Israel had turned his back. And he ran to the mountains, and he felt like he was out of options. He felt all alone, and he didn't know what to do. And God spoke to him in the whisper. Didn't yell at him, but spoke to him in the whisper. And some of the things that God said to him gave him hope. And sent him to a group of people that had never denied God. And that he would find strength and community with. God spoke to him in a whisper. That's really hard for us nowadays. If we're honest, we don't have much time to listen to whispers because we have so much noise in our life, so much going on. We are always multitasking. In fact, a study I read this week about Generation Z, that's everyone 22 and younger, averages 4 things at one time. They have their YouTube on while they're doing homework, while they're texting friends, while they're listening to music, playing a video game, and other things. In fact, 4 is the average. It's not unheard of for many of them to have 7 things going on at the same time. 7. A lot of noise. But if I'm honest, it's not just them. When I get in a line, out comes the phone. You know, when I have a moment of pause, I can't just be there and have silence. I need something to fill that. And I know I'm not alone. Most of us avoid silence. In fact, many of us don't know how to deal with silence. Silence is not just boredom. You're trapped with yourself. And that's very uncomfortable. Many of us have not come to terms with ourselves. So to be in silence is scary. But yet we're called to listen to God. And if he's using whispers, we won't hear him with the noise. We need to learn to hear God. We need to learn to quiet our lives, at least for a little bit, so that we can hear. Now, if you're here and you're not sure that Jesus is worth following, this might have been kind of a bunny trail and seems like a weird talk. But here's the basis of it. If Jesus is who he says he is, and us as followers have learned to tune in, our lives should be better than what we could live on our own. I will gladly tell you that my life is better from following Jesus than it would be on my own. But I know there's a lot of people here that has the same story, and I would encourage you to keep coming back. We're talking about real stories, real people in this next series and actually year. And so there will be lots of opportunities to hear how God's changed people's lives. I hope you hear those things and it makes you wonder, could he really be who he says he is? Is it really worth following Jesus? But if you are not a visitor and you are here, guess what? You have homework. I'm assigning you three things. You have tomorrow off, most of you, so deal with it. This week, read the Bible two times. To know God and to know his character and his standards. Read the Bible. It's God's love letter to us that reveals so much about him. Connect with a friend and ask them. So many times our friends know us really well and see things we don't. Ask them what they see is your passions and your talents. Maybe you'll learn something about yourself that you didn't know. And it's a great reason to hang out at Starbucks with a friend. The other thing, one time this week, this is going to be the hardest. One time this week, spend it in silence for 15 minutes. And when I mean silence, I mean the phone is off and you're not telling God things. This isn't prayer where you're like beseeching him for other people's behalf. This is you sitting, allowing him, listening if he's speaking. This is hard. I've done those retreats and they're like killer. But I have experienced God speaking to me in the quiet. And it's made a huge difference. I am still working on this, but so many people that are great Christians that know things that I don't know point to this and say, this is why I can live so close to God, because I can hear him, because I'm connected with him. So I was at my first church for 6 months, and then the senior pastor left. Didn't make it a happy place. We had a rough transition to the interim, and then when the interim became the senior pastor, there was some stuff that went on that made some people very unhappy. So for 2.5 years after the senior pastor left, it was kind of this rocky trail, and then all of a sudden, church split. They couldn't afford me anymore, and I got laid off. So I'm looking for my next job. We're writing down all these things that I'm looking for in a job. And we have this really long list, and no church is ever going to check off all of them. And obviously at the top is stability. And so we're looking all over the place. And it was winter in Michigan at the time, and we get flown out to the Imperial Valley. It was gorgeous there because it was in the middle of winter. I didn't know what it was like in the summer. It was gorgeous, 70 degrees every day, sunshine. We were barbecuing when all my friends in Michigan were in their jackets. If they were lucky, they would skate a little that day, but most of the time they were just hiding in their houses. Awesome. Went to the church, everything worked out, checklist, everything got checked. I could succeed there. There was a really great opportunity. We were going to have our needs met. This was perfect. And they loved us. In fact, they flew us out again. And at the end of that trip, they were like, okay, we set the thing for 2 weeks from now for the congregational meeting. They're going to vote on you. And when they're done, we're going to invite you back. It's going to be awesome. And they were super excited. And it was like they knew that we were in. There wasn't any question with them. And we're swimming at the Holiday Inn in the middle of January. And it was amazing, But me and Melissa had no peace. I mean, it was everything we wanted. No peace. Come on, God, this was... God, you're not thinking like I would. Come on. A week before they were going to vote on us, I had to call up the head of the search committee and say, you know what, I feel like a jerk. I don't even know why it is, but we don't have any peace and we can't come. And that's the way it was left for a year. A year later, I'm in San Diego. We had moved there. I had gotten another job. It was going really well. And I get this phone call. And it's the guy from the search committee from the Imperial Valley. And he's like, if there's any chance to reconsider us, we were really impressed. Would you? And I'm like, why are you guys still searching? And he starts telling me this story about how a month after they were about ready to offer me the job. About a month after that, they fired the senior pastor. It would have been the same thing over again. God had spared my family from that experience. I couldn't tell at the time why it was that I didn't have faith, but thankfully, Melissa and I were quiet enough that we heard it and we did not go through that door. I don't know if I could have taken it again. I might have left ministry. But God being God was amazing. And he went before and he opens and closes doors. Dear God, we know that you go before each and every one of us, opening and closing doors. That if we look for you in the gentle, small whisper, that you speak to us, that you guide us. Help us to do these three things this week so that we might be better at following you. In Jesus' name, amen.